we are living now, and I get the world is so complicated. It can get very easy to be overwhelmed and stuck in one space, but it's like you truly do have the power to write the story.
This is Motivation. I'm Lori Joy Kingwell.
And I'm Chrissy Van. We're two dreamers on two wheels inspired by our community.
And celebrating the voices we're just lucky enough to discover along the ride. So if not already, like, subscribe, follow along, do what you gotta do to not miss an episode.
So just like a motorcyclist balancing on that fine line between control and freedom, life often asks us to navigate that delicate balance of risk and reward. It's involved in almost everything we do, but today we're talking about those big risks and rewards. That could look like a career change or making a big move, making lifelong commitments in relationships, investing big sums of money. Those big ones, those big life decisions can feel like risky business. What if it doesn't work out? What if it fails? What if I'm disappointed? What if I lose everything? What if that loss is way more than any gain that's on the other side of that? Well, today we're chatting about just that, how risk-taking is not just a leap into the unknown, but it can be a calculated maneuver, and we can make room for strategy, and that can lead to life's most rewarding experiences. We're going to explore why our biology holds us back, rightfully so, from wanting to take risks, but also how our neural pathways light up when we decide to take that chance. There may be risk in doing that thing, whatever it might look like for you. But remember, there's also risk in not doing the thing. It's the risk of regret. And that, our dear friends, can be a hefty price to pay. This is your motivation.
So if you're joining us and you're somebody who has decided to ride a motorcycle as well, that decision did not come without risk. But when you made that leap, I can almost guarantee that most people said to you one of the following. Number one, don't you know that's dangerous? Number two, you could die. Or my third, which is my least favorite and for some reason the most popular, my uncle had a motorcycle, he died, or my friend had one, they died. And you're like, well, thanks, tips. As if I didn't realize before I took this leap that there was an inherent risk involved.
Like you came out from under a rock and then decided that you wanted to ride a motorcycle. Like
yeah, I was like, oh, what? They're dangerous.
Wait,
who
what?
Knew? Who knew? Yeah. But the reason why I highlight that is because almost any time we're taking big risks in life, there's the people that decide they want to be part of the story and narration of that life choice and generally are the ones that are going to be holding up every red flag your brain has most likely already entertained to not move forward and move through the decision. But the thing is, risks are living. Risks are living. And I think that there's, as a society, a strong aversion to risk. And if you are somebody that considers yourself really risk averse, it's not your fault. Almost everything that we are raised in as a society is to conform and not step out of a box. And generally, risks are those out-of-the-box decisions. And it's not just getting on a motorcycle. It can be professional choices that you make. It can be relationship choices that you can make. It could be moving from one country to another or province to another, anywhere where there is a strong weighing of the knowns and the unknowns. And I know on the podcast, we speak a lot to comfort zone or pushing through fear, but I'm talking about those big step off the cliff, bungee jump moments. It's funny. I grew up in a household, and Lori, we've talked about this before. Very, very risk averse parent. I mean, I had one parent that couldn't really entertain much risk at all because their health, I mean, that was a risky ride. As it was completely out of their control. But right. My mom had a lot of severe paranoia. I'm talking about, in her mind, if a vacuum salesman, which funny enough, probably did exist in the 90s, which is a thing, but came ringing the doorbell kind of thing in the middle of the day. And if we were home, she would
serial
have us
killer.
Hide behind the furniture.
Serial killer.
Yeah, I'm not even kidding. We would hide to ensure that the person could not see that we were home because we were not answering that door because there was an unknown threat on the other side of the door. I grew up thinking that it was a viable situation that could happen if I walked to school. More than likely, there was somebody out there that might want to stab me. Mm-hmm. So you would think that I would have grown up and decided, yep, I'm going to live in my bubble. I'm going to live in my bubble. And I love my sister dearly, but we grew up in that same household. And she is somebody that has picked up, not to that extreme, but a lot of those traits, a lot of added fear, generally somebody that navigates toward comfort. As I grew up, I went hard left. It was like that rebellious spirit in mine where I was like, not on my watch. So then I went extreme hard left. First time I moved away from home, I moved across the country or across the world rather to New Zealand. If I could bungee jump off something, I would. If I could skydive, yes, absolutely. If I could paraglide off a mountain because I couldn't ski, yep, I'm going to run off that mountain. And those are kind of extreme examples, but it has been my like seeking of that feeling on a strong level. But I also appreciate that that's part of my fabric because some of the most rewarding experiences I have had in regards to relationships, how I've designed my life, in regards to my professional pursuits, it has been that embracing of risk. So on the podcast today, we're really going to talk about what risk is, what are those risky decisions, and how do you evaluate the risk versus reward system and what it actually does to us. And also on the flip side, acknowledging that yes, risk can level up your life in so many ways. But if you're somebody that goes hard right on risky behavior and is only living in that space, just acknowledging that there could be some detriments to that type of lifestyle as well.
When you mentioned the culture, because it is, it's one of those things in culture, there's absolutely, without a doubt, such a kind of push to stay within the box, you know, take risks that really only push society kind of forward rather than your own personal risk, even in that regard. But like play it safe. It's best to just play it safe, get your paycheck, you know where you're going on the Saturdays to Home Depot and call it a day, do some fun things at home and just like, you know, stay within the lines and life will be okay and well. But what we also, what you can't deny and is part of what we understand with human behavior and evolution is that we don't progress as a species without risk, and that it's fundamentally part of our lives. Like anything that's worth doing or worth growing, there is a risk because you're stepping outside of that comfort zone. Amy Edmondson is a great, she's related to Eddie. She's related. Yeah. Sister. And she's somewhere out of Harvard. Anyways, the point being is that she studies and is an expert in essentially like failing well. And because at the end of the day, that's part of it that we're really trying to avoid is failure when we avoid risk. And we want to avoid what other people think and the judgment that people have in and around it. Same thing that you talked about at the very beginning of this episode of like one of the things that we hear that can be a bit of a bubble popper or deflator is that whole thing of like, don't you know it's the opinions of others of, don't you know it's unsafe? Don't you know it's this? And then we feel like we're being irresponsible by the idea even.
And
right
in too. Like,
yeah,
when you're making a decision like that, it's not one or two people. For some reason, the entire chorus pipes up.
Yeah. And in their kind of, you know, their intention at the end of the day is like, obviously, if they're talking to you, they likely know you in some capacity. And so they want to keep you safe. But then there's the other part of themselves, too, that speaking from that really ingrained, I wouldn't even say ingrained as much as evolutionary part of ourselves, that if we haven't had that experience ourselves, all we're meant to notice negativity bias and survival bias is the risk. And to say, is that risk worth that reward? Well, if they don't want to ride a motorcycle, absolutely not. And so they're taking that projection. And that's, I think, what you spoke to too at the, or reference to, is that at the beginning as well, is like, everyone's going to take their personal experience, motives, desires, and that's going to play a large role on their how they're coming in that into that conversation around that risk that you want to take. And I think that's where one of the key components that this Amy talks to as well often about is like, what's your why? Because so often as well is like, you got those people that take risks and you're kind of like, well, why are you doing it? I don't know. It'd be fun. Or I don't know. And like, okay. But if it's a huge risk that you're taking, that might not be, if that crashes and burns or not, well, we don't want to crash and burn, but if it fails, which like a lot of them do come with failure, that's part of the process. But it's like, when we're talking about risks, your why is so important. We talk a lot about why on this podcast, but it really is because it's one of those things. When you are taking that risk, you've got to move through a lot of challenging pieces of yourself as on a personal level, your like our wiring, all those different things. But almost everything that's worthwhile in your life, really and truly, that brings you to leveling up as just a human, growing, expanding, finding your joy, finding, you know, things that like make you tick, all the things, is on the other side of some pretty big risks.
We talked about obviously the influence of other people, but just like society mindset, a good example of this, and your husband's in finance, so he will know this well, but you look at the type of accounts that are advertised to the average human and kind of what you learn about banking or finance growing up. Everything is about keeping your cash flow in safety. Oh, I'm going to just put it in this safe little high interest savings account. If I have a savings account with my bank and it's going to make its little 2% of interest, and you know that it's guaranteed to do that and compound, and that's the recipe to life. Where in reality, the people that are leveling up are the ones that are getting the stocks and investing in different places and diversifying portfolios. And if you've ever worked in a company where you've had that option, there's always this questionnaire that you fill out, your risk assessment questionnaire. And so many people stay in the balanced line, whereas the biggest gains can happen if you live outside of that. However, at the same time, you also open yourself up to the losses. And I think that's why anytime we're making some of these big decisions, you have to really balance the risk versus reward. I kind of like wanted to tackle this topic because you can evaluate this even on a small level and really like visualize and take yourself through a mental game. So Lori and I were at the Vancouver Motorcycle and Power Sport Show to start off the new year. Big shout out to Krista at Delacrew that helped facilitate and make that happen. We had the Kickstands Down Lounge. There were a ton of women-owned businesses. We met tons of you. It was awesome. But even going into that, I can feel an essence of like old patterns of myself. I know that I like reference my career so often, but it's because it actually gave me a lot to work through psychologically over things I didn't realize that were happening, being in this really corporate environment for so long. Like everything is about playing their game, following their rules. You feel very owned because it's your public image and you're so nervous to step out of line. I'm not in that situation now. However, when I was faced with this opportunity, I still have a day job. And, you know, they're two different niches, but they parallel in a lot of ways. And I was like, am I like jeopardizing where I'm at by making this one decision and going one step more public with something I'm really passionate about? And then I started to play in my brain and be like, well, okay, the scenario that I'm making up, A, of the loss is way worse in actuality of what would probably ever, ever happen. Because brains are really good at doing that. Like it's the proverbial jumping out of the plane and your chute doesn't open is more than likely where your brain's going to take you. But as I said to Lori in the car before we were setting up that day, I was like, to be truthful with you, I had a lot of anxiety going into this, and this is why. And I think it's important to acknowledge when you are entertaining risky decisions, more than likely anxiety is going to crop up for you. And we know that that's a strong relationship with our fear response.
It's right? Not if, it's when. It's like, it's an impossibility for it to not in our like, yeah.
It's- yeah, you can't avoid it. And so I said to her, but then I really got clear over the two scenarios. There's the one path of us doing this and I know that it will be great and that this is worthwhile. And how cool to think something that didn't exist a couple of years ago, that we're being invited into this space and a part of our community, like that alone. And that sense of belonging and recognition, I was like, I want to cherish and soak up that moment, because we completely made all this shit up and now it's a thing, because that's how life works. And on the other side, I was like, what if somehow my boss shows up and he's pissed and I get fired and I lose my income and my mortgage is super high, because that's a risk I took with a variable mortgage, which was super dumb. But I was we live and we learn. But I was like, what if, like, then I've got my bills to pay and this and that. And I entertained all the pathways of that worst case scenario. And I was like, if all that happened, would I still do it? Is it worth it? And I was like, fuck yeah, it's worth it. But like, there was enough naysaying in my brain, truthfully, if I wasn't somebody that was able to step back and just look at that through such a clear lens and really explore, as you said, Lori, why? Why did we start the Motovation? What did that mean to me? Why is this important? Is this part of my mission? And I was like, fuck yeah, to all of that. So then it was a no-brainer. But I think if I hadn't done as much like mental work and training to actually look clearly, the anxiety would have won. And in my past, it has. It fucking has. Like, I have journaled, as we know, because like, haha, I always bring up the motherfucking journal. But
you need to start a journal company.
Right? There are certain things in life or pathways that could have been mine that aren't, yeah, because the other side won. Point in case, and just a quick anecdote, because it's so funny to me. I now work in fitness industry on the B2B side. But years ago, when I was in broadcasting and I was actively competing in fitness competitions, I got approached on LinkedIn by a company that said, hey, we've got this app-based fitness device coming out for cycling, and we're looking for like personalities to be instructors. Now, I don't know if this recruiter was the OG Peloton, but it was like around the time all of that was coming up. And in my mind, because I was so owned and under, I was like, no, like I'm in my safe little bubble land. Like I didn't even entertain to explore the conversation further. I think of that now, how hilarious if that was our Peloton, or even in the infancy of those apps, all those people became a big motherfucking deal and are like, yeah, writing their own checks through influencing. And I'm kind of like, when you do audits, you can see where your risk and reward analysis, where the loss won, it can rob you of those big life opportunities sometimes. Often does. That said, I could have stepped into the unknown and it could have completely been a stupid decision and not worked out. Like that is where the fun of risk comes, because
I was going to say, but even if it didn't work out, even if you did a risk, I think what the most important thing that you're saying here, and there's massive value in this, because anyone that I've ever listened to that this is what, that's what they do for a living is study, you know, failures, study failing well, essentially, because there is a difference, you know what I mean, where it's like, definitely, you just kind of like throw yourself into it without any assessment. And now what you spoke to earlier is like, when you, that I think is really important to note, that anyone can take and put into place for themselves, is that when you start to go down that pathway of anxious thinking, what is the risk? Could this risk be dire? How dire? All the, and the runaway train that can become, and the rumination and the story is the stopping and recognizing that's what started to take place. Oh, I've got fear coming in. Is it fear of the unknown? Is it fear of I've got a lot at stake here? Is it fear because of what people think of me? Like, what's kind of the identifying fear or fears? And then it's the assessing, and you kind of even take yourself to like, what's the worst case scenario? And this is really important, because you can recognize with a little bit of space between, without you identifying that that's actually likely going to happen, because the likelihood is actually very small that the worst case scenario could happen. But like you said, you walked through the worst case scenario and then still asked yourself, would I? you might walk yourself through the worst case scenario. Like, let's say it's motorcycling and you're like, I fly off of a cliff and I am a goner, or I'm paralyzed and that's how I have to live my life. Is that worth it? And you kind of might still say, like, I've gone through those scenarios in my head. And for me, I'm like, oh, absolutely. Everything it's brought into my life and the joy. Yes, absolutely. But it's one of those things where you give enough space that you can recognize that the likelihood of the worst case scenario, but there's all these other scenarios too, that you get to look at, of like, gives you time and space to say, also, what could happen for me, not to me, against me, all those things that our brain wants to protect us from, or our egos or wiring. But it's that there's a lot of beautiful things that can come out of this. And when you have enough space, you can look at it rationally. You can give yourself the information to actually make the risk assessment. Because we think that the risk assessment is arguing with ourselves or spiraling. We think that that's been our risk assessment. We're like, no, not no. It's just not worth it. And you're like, that's, you haven't. And that's what is happening with the majority of people. You know, it's that fixed mindset. It's that once they get scared and they feel that scared feeling, it becomes about making the feeling go away, and they actually lose sight about what it is their why was, or the intrigue, or the pull factor, or life speaking to them, the whispers, whatever it was, because now it becomes about, I just want to avoid this really gross feeling, get me back in my box. And I think it's knowing going in, you are going to be uncomfortable. There's no way around it. But that normalizing that and recognizing that's what's happening actually makes it easier, makes it more navigatable, is that where you're like, oh yeah, I'm having that really human experience. There's likely something really worth it on the other side of it. And maybe there's not, but that's where that assessment comes in, of looking at it as like, what am I prioritizing in my fear, or where's my fear kind of coming from? Because not feeling it isn't an option. Identifying what categories, you know, perception from other people and then the rejection, exposing my weaknesses. Does that feel mm-hmm. uncomfortable? Is that pulling up early childhood shit where I wasn't enough, and that's touching triggers? Because there's also things where you're like, taking that chance might not be about whether or not you achieve the thing, or the thing works out or doesn't work out. That could be an opportunity for you to just heal, being like, whether or not my outcome, you know, that kind of like Buddhism look at non-attachment, whether or not this happens the way I want it to or doesn't want, this process alone is going to be a healing experience, being like, it's not about outcome ultimately. It's about following the breadcrumbs and having a trust that this is the step that, you know, is best for me overall. And that six failures and non-outcomes and building that resiliency and strength likely will lead to the seventh. That is your ultimate big payoff, big reward. And that's where it's like the reason we're so risk adverse is because we're failure adverse, and we don't learn young how to navigate that. And I think that's also why we're at a society that's so risk adverse. And I get that it's bigger too in certain aspects when it comes to like economies and how that works. And I don't understand that world. That's not my niche, but human it's behavior.
Doing bad, except for a very small percentage of humans.
I don't know how great we're doing all. yeah, exactly. Right. So yeah, I think that's the most important, or one of the most important key factors for you, for whoever is listening, and for ourselves, Chrissy, is to remind ourselves and to be aware that having an idea that A, it's part of it, the fear, acknowledging the fear when it's taking place, identifying what are the kind of driving forces, and then giving enough space to go to the, like, what's the worst case scenario, but also what's the best case scenarios, and like, you know, and making a decision within that. And also, here's the one thing I want to bring up that's a little bit of like, a branch off of that is like, it's an exceptionally important and valuable thing to share this out loud with people. But people that I think it's important to recognize, people that share your value systems don't exactly agree with everything you say and don't exactly aren't going to just be yes people or just like, yes, go do that because they're like, this is fun. But people that I say value system in the way of like, you respect and align with their mindset, or they have a great mindset around growth, or they have value when it comes to seeing things in and around risk assessment that is valuable. Because also we can share it too much with too many people, and then we get too many apparent, and now we have like analysis paralysis, or we're so saturated with other people's experiences or projections or opinions that we're actually now deeper into the worry of what people will think. You know, my mom's big on that in her personality. She gets so many opinions, and she does it from a really, she means well, but there's a lack from my perspective of looking in, and this is again, just my opinion on it. Is that there's a lack of confidence in her own choices. Once she makes a choice, she goes full, like she's just like a freight train. And that's where I get my like freight train decision making. Once I make the decision, I go full ahead. But we're very different in how we go about making that decision. And I think after she makes a decision, then she goes back to the, did I make the right decision? Did I? Didn't I? Oh, no. Even though like everything looks as though, yeah, like, you know, why trust it, right? But because yeah, she hasn't ultimately made the decision from an of her own core knowing place, she just got enough opinions that it made it so that then the worry comes on the other side. Whereas like, when you take in opinions that you are like, they know this arena, they know this area, and or they share this value system or this mindset, but ultimately you're making your core full body yes as much as you can, which I'd like to talk later on about full body yeses. Once you make that decision, you trust that no matter how it ends up, it's ultimately for your highest value and self, no matter how it ends up. Because if it does go south, it's still for you.
Yeah. It's that allowing wholeheartedly. And yes, I want to dive more into the full body yes, because I know you can kind of take us through some of the science of that. But one of the things that resonates with me so much is exactly that, getting married to the outcome. Some of my biggest sources anxiety has been when you're trying to control an outcome that ultimately you need to accept. You can influence through your actions in regards to showing up consistently every day and doing everything you can out of that day. And I don't mean to the point of exhaustion where you're operating and giving 100 of 100 every day. It's the giving, if you have 40 that day, your full 40, like just knowing when you turn the page on the day, giving what you have to it, but not being married to a specific outcome. Because if you end up very tied to that when you make a risk decision, that is going to be the source of a lot of pain points for you and stress residing in your body. That is so unnecessary when we realize as the what audacity of a human to think that in any capacity you can actually do X and for sure get Y. Like, I don't think there's many things in life that go from this to that kind of thing. And yet we try so hard to like squeeze it and shape it. And when there's like certain balls all of a sudden going that way and you thought it would be pink, but instead it's orange kind of thing. Like, you just need to allow and let it flow and roll with it. Because I know in my own life, when I finally stopped creating my own resistance, it's like those books that say, get out of your own goddamn way. Like, make the choice, but also don't make it because you're specifically banking on 100% getting the outcome you necessarily visualized in that things going right. Strive for it for sure, but you kind of have to have this radical acceptance that you can only do what you can do,
but like life is gonna life.
Yeah. And I don't mean, and I want to be clear that Chrissy and I aren't speaking to that thing of like, where you're not thinking through anything and you're just like running away from your life, or you go to extremes of adrenaline rushes and then it crashes and burns. You're like, yes, that was supposed to happen. I'm like, you know what, that then? Yeah, it's going to crash and burn until you learn your lesson. Like, yeah. Actually, that still is happening for you. You'll keep making the
same mistake over and over.
Yeah. Like I was like, you can avoid, you can run from, but like you cannot hide. And so we're not speaking to this of just like, just say fuck it and just go do it, you know? And I think we are being clear that that's not what we're saying, but, you know, to be honest, you know, like I used to be a bit more like that, where I just only went on my gut. And don't get me wrong, often it did work out for me. But there was times where I was running away. Even I don't say this from a space and place of the, it sounds nice, or it's, I've had lots of failures and I've had lots of successes, and I've taken big risks, financial risks, risks in, in relationships.
That's how they make you feel in your head when you're entertaining it. Risks.
Yeah, it is. But the older I get, the more that, and the more I get, the more experiences that I've had, the more practicing that you take steps within the risk. And also the more I understand human behavior, it's allowing me to make wiser risks, bigger risks, but also I'm like, oh, I had that information. I didn't know I had that information when I was younger, but I'm so glad that I had an instinctual push factor, because I didn't grow up in a family either that took risks. I had a big dreaming family that almost never took a risk on the dream, because the fear of the unknown or rejection was too intense. And so they would say, this would be really cool to do. And then the just line them up, all the reasons why probably shouldn't, wouldn't, couldn't. Oh, well, you know, this guy might walk right in front of me at the last second and that could feel bad. So I'm going to, you know what? I'm going to stay right here. I'm going to stay right here.
Yeah.
You know, and like, and we grew up in smaller communities. And so there was a lot of that there and all the above, right? Because you kind of like in your, you know, your bubble, your echo chamber, if you will. But the full body, yes, along with the assessments, I just personally think like that is as key as I've learned so far as to like how to navigate it and really fucking go for it in life.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm always somebody, and yes, it was a bit of like the adrenaline searching in the beginning, like for the big risks you take more so in your 20s kind of thing. I'm going to jump out of this and climb off of this, and not to say that that stops, but as I get older and ironically more practiced, I actually have to check myself more and like remind myself of the side of myself that is like a full fuck yes. And again,
we'll send it.
Full fuck yes. Because as we say, it's not.
Yeah,
like,
you're a send it person through and through.
And it's like not, and like acknowledging too, I'm a child-free woman that's 37 in a month and a half kind of thing. Like there's, I have a lot less to, my decisions impact a lot less people. So, but that's also something that I remind myself of. I'm like, that's a life choice that I've made. I am a full send person. I am a full send person. Like I have to actually look myself in the mirror and be like, let's do this, because the pulls actually feel like they have a stronger gravity to keep you safe the older I get. Like yeah. The steps that I have to take to actually do what resonates with me are somehow I like a bit harder in a way, but at the same time, not like I have such an awareness over it. But for whatever reason, the older I get, and I think it is just you're surrounded by more and more people that are settled in the grooves. And so I think there is that little bit more societal noise. And obviously, the older you get, generally, depending on how many ties you have to certain things, there's a stronger sense of responsibility as we get older. Again, that can dissolve if you want it to as well, to a degree. Right. There's a lot of ways to live a life.
You've built a career, you've saved and bought the house and the vehicles and the things. Like there is like some tangible things too. You don't want to like burn the boats and necessarily unless you're like very sure, but like, yeah, you've accumulated in your 20s. You're like, what do I have to lose? Also, your prefrontal cortex hasn't fully developed. So your impulse control is like, fuck it.
Totally.
We're at like 40. You're kind of like, fuck it. I think. Yeah.
But it's so true. And which it's exactly
a good thing, you know?
For sure. And I was looking at, and this is, I know, more your wheelhouse, but I was curious as to like what factors are involved when we take a risk. And it's crazy how many like parts of your brain it actually lights up. Like, obviously you've got like that. Thank God for a prefrontal cortex. It adds a little bit of rationale to the decision-making. Yeah, sure, because other, like, I was looking like at the difference
on the street, you know, and you're like, what happened? I had a roof over my head and I don't now. And you're like,
totally. Cause yeah. It's like, I don't even know how to pronounce it. Our amygdala. How do we say that?
Amygdala?
You probably know better than amygdala.
Love that.
You're like me pronouncing like,
words. This is me usually.
Right? I'm 100%. Like Amy G. Dalla. But it's like that's sort of like evaluating like how we perceive and respond. Like that can kind of like trigger our fear. And then it's like you have your other voice that's starting to like balance and try and see what rational decision making. And then you have the things that love adrenaline and dopamine and all those feel goods. Yep. And you're like, woo, let's just do this. And all of that is talking to you as you're trying to make these life decisions. And like, that's why, like, I loved how you verbalized it before, taking the space and distance and doing this analysis. Not to the point of analysis paralysis is so fucking important when you're thinking of these decisions, because as you speak to your family, that's like lived in this dream state. And I know people as well that live in that dream state. And I am somebody that is like full of dreams, but like, this is an important topic to me because I see so many people that don't realize how fucking fast time goes. I mean, how many 40th birthdays do we have this year? And at the end of the day, you think of the last 20 years and it feels like it was a long time, but also it went quickly. And that means the next 20, all of a sudden you're 60. And if you're lucky, I mean, I think aging is a beautiful thing. I'm in the camp. Like, I have celebrated every year that I've been gifted because, you know, you grow up when somebody loses their life very early, you realize that time is not a guarantee. But also, those things that are calling you, I can think of nothing more sad than that becoming a regret when you're older. And the only thing standing between you and that being the reality are your choices and decisions. That's it. But like, far too many people are getting to those years filled with dreams that were just left and scattered, never realized. And you're like, we are living now. And I get the world is so complicated. It can get very easy to be overwhelmed and stuck in one space. But it's like you truly do have the power to write the story. And I know it sounds so cheesy, but like you actually fucking do.
Your reality is like what you make it. Even in no matter circumstances on the outside, there's still a reality in which how you're viewing it. You're still seeing it through your perspective, your perceptive lens. And so even if you can create enough space to start, like even if it's a matter of you're just like, look, like those are too big of leaps. I got big dreams, or I have these desires, or I have these body yeses. And I know it's those, like, it's a bit of the training ground and the skill set too, where if you can even recognize small risks that would take place in a day that you avoid out of discomfort or wanting to stay feeling like yourself, you can tune and tone yourself and your thinking and your perspective into acknowledging that feelings coming up. So it's whether or not you just like talk to somebody in the elevator. If you're like, they don't want to talk to me and I'm not going to talk to them because I wouldn't want to bother. And like, just like, hey, how's your day? Like, even if it's things like that, where you're having these mini moments to push yourself out of that, because the risk is that they'll say no to you, or their risk is that you're going to be rejected in some way and then you're going to feel junky. And why would I want to take a risk in an elevator to walk out of an elevator and feel junky? Where it's that thing of like, it's practice, so that also, one, you're just having human connection, but two, ultimately, you're practicing these moments of mini discomfort so that when the ones that really count come up, that you've got a tolerance for them. Like there's a guy in our building, and there's something bigger happening, and even I think to a certain extent, neurodivergent potentially, but he is, outwardly, he comes across as like miserable, angry, even borderline aggressive. And yeah, actually someone was staying at my place the other day and they were like, yeah, this guy on the go. And he was just like losing his shit. But everyone kind of just quietly wasn't like weird, but everyone was like, just stay in your corner. I'm like, oh, I know who you're talking about. And whenever I'm around him, I acknowledge him. I don't change who I am because of who he is. And like to the point where like his dogs come up, I know his dog's name. They come up to say hi. And I could tell there was an intensity because he kind of pulled the dog back. And I just said, can I say hi to Prince today? And I just say it like that. Can I say hi to Prince today? And he goes, no, not today. And I said, okay, no problem. And then he's like, I'm very angry today. And I was like, oh yeah, have an angry day. That's no problem. And then when he got off the elevator, and this is like, we've had so many interactions, right? So many interactions. And I'm always just in a place of like, I'm okay. You just reject, like, I'm not rejected. It's not that personal. It's not that deep. Like, it's okay. Yeah. And whereas like most people just avoid this guy because he's just like, I don't know what to expect. And therefore I feel this and stuff. Like there's risk, right? For the reward. Yes. What? Whereas yeah. I look at it as like, I'm not, the reward for me is like connecting. And also like, I get this person would be repelled obviously by most of society, or repels them. Right. And he says, as he gets off the elevator the last time, I'm sorry, I'm so grumpy. Next time I'll give you a hug. And I went, okie dokie. And I just saw him yesterday, actually. I'm like waving out my car window. And he's like, you can see that little like smirk, like, hi, you know, but like, this has been years, you guys, of just me just being consistent and open, even though I know 9 times out of 10, I'm rejected by this person. It's that it's not about that. My why is about like, hey, he's just a human that needs that. I'm just, and his dogs are cute. And here's the thing. It allows me also, and it's not just him. It allows me to be like, I'm going to be me consistently as much as possible. And that has always allowed me to take bigger risks because I am always a bit fine tuning myself to be okay if I get rejected. Like they're like, what if, you know, if you've met me, you're like, oh yeah, this is on brand. Is like, I can't believe you did that. I can't believe you said that. I would be terrified to do that in public. And it, for me, I'm like, what's the worst case scenario? They just are like, they just don't like me. They don't want to play with me. Like, that's okay. I usually find more people that do than don't. So the reward for the risk is it's been proven over and over and over to me why it's worth it. But what happens is that so often from a very young age, we're not taught how to navigate that. And so we get rejected, or we're on the outs, or we failed, and we judgment comes, and we don't know how to process that. And so what we do is our brain essentially says, if you just don't do that thing again, or if you don't put yourself out there again, you won't have that uncomfortable feeling again. And what we don't also realize is that every time that you back down, walk away from, don't try, avoid, you actually send messages to your neurocircuitry to say, it goes, oh, good. That's the key. You just don't try. You just don't do. And then woof, we are good. So every time you try, you actually turn up the volume because it goes, I know how to save you. Get away. Don't do. Just stay in your little prison. And then you're like, but I really want to. And it's like, no, I've got your best intention. If I don't think you're listening, I'm really going to turn the fear factor up. I'm really going to turn up your like fight, flight, or freeze response. And so every time that you do this elevator conversation, something slightly that makes you just the littlest bit uncomfortable, but you test the waters, even if your reward is I'm sending neurocircuitries to my brain of I'm quite okay. I can do hard things and I'm still alive and I'm quite okay. And that was just an uncomfortable feeling. You build up a resiliency and a capacity to do those big things that have big payoff. And you're able to turn the volume down by creating space in those moments, like we spoke about, where you were like, hey, stop, I'm ruminating, I've got a runaway train of thoughts. Call a family meeting, team meeting within yourself. All right, 20-year-old self, tell me what you got. Why, you know, okay, big dreamer. What do you got? Okay, worry, worry, wart. What do you got for me? And they're like, okay, here's the thing. You've got a mortgage and you might, and I don't want to see you on the street. Valid, valid point. Thank you so much. You know, big dreamer, what you got for me? Hey, do you really want to die with this on your deathbed? Do you really want to live a lifetime where you like prioritize what people think over like the joy of knowing that you could? Or like, you know what I mean? Call
totally
in meeting, bring them to the table, hear what they've got to say, assess and evaluate. And that way too, when you've made the decision and you start to hit the fucking panic button, or you're in that like the zone of not knowing and you're floating in the abyss, you got the team meeting being like, we've all brought our best to the table. Fucking trust it. Jesus, take the wheel.
I think that's the perfect way to lead us to motivation.
Hands. Bringing some soul. Bringing some soul. Okay.
So bust out your journals. No, just kidding.
Actually, just
reflective journaling would be.
Obviously, I'm a huge journaler, so I'm right behind Chrissy on that. And that's maybe not her maintenance. But I just want to put it out there. Again, why the journaling, and also for this, is that getting your thoughts down on paper is one of the most studied ways to stop rumination as well, because you can also write down the story that you're telling yourself and you can see how ridiculous it is. You can also write down your inspirations and their aha moments, so that once you do also get in your head and you ruminate, that you do have on paper the clarity and the clarification of like, oh, when I was in a clear state, this is what I think and thought. And also when you're in a rumification, oh, this is fucking ridiculous.
Right?
Oh, I'm like, there's a reason Chrissy referenced it left, right, and center, yes, as far as changes her life.
But that's not, yes, my actual motivation. I think I've shared the story of when I first started visualizing, and it was like my dad that completely introduced me to the notion of it. And at the time, I was so shit at sports. The only thing that I was decent at was long distance running. And then ended up qualifying for this cross country race. And I was really, really nervous. And I remember my dad took me to the park that this run was taking place, and we just went for a walk. And then that night, funny enough, he used music, but he, in a little cassette player at the time, gave me the Rocky song. Dun, 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 dun. And he's like, go for your run. Put the headphones on. And it's like, I did the experience in my brain and like what it felt like. And he had me pay attention to like, what does it smell like? What does the ground feel like beneath your feet? And because I would get so nervous for things like that, I would vomit. Like, I'm not even kidding. Mm-hmm. And by the time it was race day, he's like, you've already done it. You've already proven to yourself you can. Like, go get it, kid, and just like absorb the experience and be present in it. When you are entertaining these types of life choices, visualization is such a great tool, combined with what Lori highlighted about creating the distance. So you're observing the scenarios and actually looking through as clear a lens as your mind can offer you in that moment. What perhaps the worst case outcome would be, what the dream outcome would be. And then you're able to actually have a proper critical think of what you want to do from that point in case.
I think mine would be recognizing, once you've decided whether or not you're going to do it, or maybe this, well, I guess this would be along with making the decision as well, but it's that what is this going to offer in an outcome? that's like pulling me towards my why. But also it's like, and if that doesn't happen, what does it offer me in learning? Mm-hmm. Because it's one of those things where it's like, well, again, the risk assessment in and around, is this worth it? That pull factor, the reward on the other side of it for what it's at risk. And then if it doesn't go the way that I hope it's going to go, what can I learn from that? I think is really big components to help you so that you're not attached to that outcome. And this isn't mine. This is from that Amy gal. But this is her step. So I'm going to share this to help you more from a science-based viewpoint. But it's getting clear about that goal. It's like, what is that I'm looking, the reward on the other side, the why, all the above, and then understanding it's new terrain, right? So immediately you're going to want to avoid the terrain to go with it. But what also helps the brain to become more comfortable with the terrain is information. That's what makes it feel so like out of control, is it doesn't have enough patterns and it doesn't have enough information. So it goes, this might not be safe. I'm going to dub it in unsafe terrain. So how you dub it a little bit safer terrain within your brain, therefore your emotional state. And it doesn't mean this alleviates the fear completely, but this, or it does alleviate it, but it doesn't make it dissipate, is getting information from whether that's online or in and around what your goal is. Cause here's the thing, there's a million people that have done it already that made mistakes that you can learn from. So going online and figuring out from reliable sources or people that you know that are resources, it's like following the breadcrumbs. And so once you have people conversations, again, not oversaturated and also not from people that have no invested interest, I guess, in any capacity in an aligned way. Also, it's like, don't make the steps larger than they have to be. So it's that like, take as many micro steps as you can towards that risk as well. And then the last one she states, number five, is that take the lessons throughout again and learn from them. So you're always looking at it as like, I'm just learning. I'm not really failing. It feels junky. But that means I'm learning, because when it feels junky, it means that there's something that you've done outside of the norm. So I'll just say it real quick, is like, get clear on your goal. Why does it matter to you? It's new terrain. So there's no avoidance of the trial and possible error of it. Do your homework, get knowledge from others who have been and learned in that area, research online, but don't oversaturate yourself. Don't bet larger than you need to. And take those like micro steps, and then take whatever happens and learn from it. And as much as possible, have a state of non-attachment to it. If you kind of have those five steps, next time you have those fear and risk, just put those into place. Just put those into place and see how differently you feel.
I hate who my quote is from, but I really like the quote. Okay. Because it's Mark Zuckerberg that said it.
It's an unknown author.
I mean, you can't deny dude took risks.
He's a fucking slime bag about it. Don't take those risks where you're slime bag about it. But took
The biggest risk is not taking any risk. In a world that is changing really quickly, the only strategy that is guaranteed to fail is not taking risks.
It's a great one. But he kind of stole that too from like a very old quote. That's like the only I'll say it wrong, but essentially the only failure is not trying at all.
I mean, it wouldn't be the first thing he stole.
I was going to say that guy is a fucker that steals shit. So I'm not surprised. He's like, here's my words of wisdom. He just revamped an old traditional quote.
I mean, they're stealing our faces from the metaverse and all the things.
I swear he's a robot. If you watch him, you're like, you don't have blood running in your veins, sir.
That's going to be my next offer question is do you, which like, oh, nice. I'm going to list a bunch of billionaires and be like robot or not. And why?
That is a really good one. I like that one.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not my friends, our friends.
That is your motivation. Pew, pew, pew. Pew, pew. Wow, wow, wow.
You've just listened to the Motivation Podcast with your host, Chrissy Van, and me, Lori Joy Kingwell.
Thanks for joining us along the ride. We've got new episodes dropping every Monday, and we're all about community. So follow us on Instagram at Motivation Podcast and visit our website at themotivation.com.
And in the meantime, tanks full and full throttle.